Because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Happy New Year, coach. Whether you're an old or new fan, thanks for supporting the Basketball Podcast. We look forward to a great 2020. One coach emailed me over the holidays, told me, "Coach, we have more wins already than all of last year. Even better, they're against teams we have never beat in the past." All thanks to full basketball immersion, as I like to say. Simply put, basketball immersion has made new to basketball girls into really good basketball players. We have been playing some beautiful basketball, which is crazy to think back in March when I was trying to guess where on the schedule we could get a win. Thanks for all you do in sharing the game. Well, I'm grateful for Coach for sharing that, and I look forward to some great success for all of you in 2020. Enjoy the podcast. Coach, it's a real treat today. Nedad Tronich is with us. And Coach, first off, welcome to the podcast. As a young coach, I remember watching so many of your coaching videos and your coaching notes through the FIBA Europe website. And thanks for taking some time with us.
Thank you to invite me. It's my pleasure.
Incredible depth of knowledge and a great sharer of the game. And, you know, your background, I mean, it would take us the whole podcast to go through all the things that you've done and shared. And you've been involved in FIBA Europe, as I just alluded to, with coaching clinics, FIBA Europe coaching certification. You have a PhD in training technology and basketball, and you're currently a professor of, you're talking about specializing a little bit right now as a professor on basketball training technology and selection. Can you talk a little bit about that? What are you doing right now in your professorship?
So in my professor career from the beginning, for 10 years, I was working on College of Coaching. This is a basketball college in Belgrade just for basketball coaches, 3 years program with 5 courses only related to basketball. So I was professor over there in 3 courses, and now on University Singidunum in Belgrade and Faculty of Physical Education and Management in Sport, I'm teaching student basketball, training technology in sport related to all sports, and also on master's study, I'm teaching talent identification and selection. Of course, I'm going deeper with basketball, and this is my specialty, but of course, two topics like training technology and talent identification also general for other sports.
It's tremendous and tremendous stuff. And there's tons of videos online talking about some of these things, but you're not just a professor, you're a basketball coach, and you've applied so many of these ideas and topics. And you just finished some time with Iran, with their coordinating their youth program and consulting with their national program. Tremendous success as Iranian basketball has developed. And then going back to the past, a Serbian national team coach with the under-16s, under-17s. Coach, where I know you best is through so many people in New Zealand who have been influenced by you and the sharing and the coaching that you did on that in that country. And so many people speak so highly of you from your time as the New Zealand national team coach.
I'm very happy. Unfortunately, they beat me twice with New Zealand on an Asian championship. We fight against because they are, of course, much better than Iran. But it was a great experience for me and great pleasure to compete against New Zealand teams because they are very tough always. And it's always a big challenge to play against them.
Well, you helped develop them. So it's kind of your own fault. But we're going to spend time today on so many topics probably. But I wanted to start with a little bit on, we haven't done enough on defending a ball screen. So Coach, what's your primary philosophy now on defending the ball screen in the modern game?
So first of all, I'm always saying to my players, it doesn't matter if I'm talking about kids or senior players, top level players. So first of all, basketball team is as a company. So we should decide and we should divide the responsibilities of players in all the situation. Starting teaching point in Arden 16, first of all, I think that we should start teaching kids ball screens before we should work on different fundamentals. Ball screen is not first stuff to work on. But when we start working, first thing is that the ball screen's defense is not 2 players. Defense is 5 players defense. So 5 players are inside the court because in top level also looking just for NBA, a lot of teams starts to play pick and roll in order to provide some good corner 3-point shot, for example. So because of that, first starting teaching point is that the pick and roll defense is 5-5 defense.
So when you first teach it then, Coach, are you talking about doing it 5-on-5? Or are you talking about having all 5 players on the floor so they understand it better?
So I'm starting generally, I think this is opinion of a lot of top European players. I was watching a lot of practices of Željko Obradović, Messina, a lot of clinics, of course. I'm starting with 4-on-4 because I think with 4-on-4, starting from shell drills, from simple shell drill, jumping to the ball, defining ball side, help side, and all other rules, flat triangle position, then I on the first pass, no help from the first pass, all those basic principles for man-to-man defense without screens. I want to just, when I'm starting to work on screens, of course, first of all, they should have knowledge. They should master all those skills before to start to play pick and roll defense. So after that, I'm starting with 4-on-4 because with 4-on-4 situation, with four players on the court, we can cover practically all situations on on-ball screens and also other stuff like on-ball screens too. But players should cover a little bit more space than in 5-on-5. So after that, when we are going to add one offensive and one defensive player, it's much easier for them. So always I'm starting from 4-on-4, let's say like this. And of course, we should start defining responsibilities of players. So let's say like this, let's start with the responsibilities of two main actors, or ball handler defender and screener defender. Screener defender, first of all, ball pressure. So he should put the pressure on the ball and he should start to influence on ball handle in some way. According to the pick and roll defense, we decide what we want to do. If it's going to be ice defense or help and recover on flat defense or trap, whatever we are playing. Basic principle of my coaching philosophy, defensive philosophy, is ball pressure. So I don't want offensive player to think what to do. I want him to be under some kind of pressure and I want defender to influence on him to do something what he doesn't like. So this is first. So ball pressure. Ball pressure, of course, means that always we should have one hand on the ball. Okay, defender must have one hand on the ball and one hand on the passing line. Basic principle of one-on-one defense. After that, if we talk about pick and roll defense, I'm starting to teach first hedge and recover, or hard show and recover. Different terminology, but same way, because I think this is much more aggressive way of defense, except trap defense, of course. And I think that especially in youth program is not so easy for young players to find good offensive option against that kind of defense. Because it's too easy for players to pull break down from aggressive defense to go in less aggressive defense, then from less aggressive to move to more aggressive. So because of that, this is my philosophy. I'm always starting with aggressive defense. In that kind of defense, okay, ask me something.
Agree. No, this is great. And I like that. So let's go back to quickly the ball pressure piece that you're talking about, on the ball pressure from the player defending the ball handler. What are your cues for them? Because one of the common problems is that that player doesn't connect with the ball handler. Are we talking forearm in terms of pressure, in terms of influencing the ball where we want it to go? Are we talking about, what type of connection are you talking about?
So I'm saying, I think like this. First of all, ball handler, defender, they must hear information about coming screen. So my philosophy, my principles when I'm teaching kids, so screener defender, usually screener is coming from the low post, let's say this typical situation, 1-on-5 pick and roll, doesn't matter if you talk about 1-on-5, 2-5, 1-4, but usually in youth program, screener is coming from low post position. So my rule for screener defender is to inform, to communicate to the ball handler defender before the free throw line.
Okay.
So in this way, ball handler defender has time to correct, to adjust his position according to the information that screen is coming from left or from the right side. So like this, we are coming, because of course we cannot divide so strictly. We can divide right now just talking, but in the basketball game like situation that is going fluently, both situations and both responsibilities together. So once when screener defender is going to say screen left, screen right, of course he should make hand check, he should bump his opponent. He don't need to left him to go directly to set screen in front of him, because defender, screener, defender is closer to the ball than screener, usually. So I don't want him to left to come in front. And here I'm using also one basic principle from my basic basketball defensive philosophy. This is no face cut. So in this situation, let's think that we have low post player who is running to set screen. Okay, top of the key or shake, pick and roll, doesn't matter, whatever you want. So first goal for screener defender, don't allow him to come in front of you to sprint and to make advantage 1 or 2 meters, because if he's going to Skinner is going to make that advantage, we have immediately two against one situation, and ball handler is defender is in the trap, and he's in the trouble. So Skinner defender's responsibilities are, first of all, see Skinner to come over there, make hand check, strong head check with him, follow him, don't let him to make face cut in front of him to set screen, and of course, before the free throw line, inform ball handler that screen is about side of screen. This is his goal.
Just to clarify, the face cut is what you're talking about in terms of the screener sprinting to set the screen. The player defending that screener doesn't want them to take a straight line path to the screen.
Yes.
And they want to arrive at the same
time. Yes. He wants to make some kind of banana cut or something like that. He don't want him to let. So no face cut. This is one of the main defensive. This is face cut too. If he's coming in front of him to set screen, this is face cut. So, of course, we have different it's same terminology for different situations, face cut.
Love it. Want to clarify, yeah. So, no face cut. And then in this hedge situation, when, let's say, the defender on the ball is forcing the ball towards the hedge because we don't want to get rejected on, what are some teaching cues for that player covering the ball?
So, player who is covering the ball, he's going to push players on the screen, push offensive ball handler on the screen. So, practically, in this situation, when he's hearing from behind that screen is coming, I don't know, let's say from left side, okay, his responsibility is right side. So on the court, he should close one side and screener defender responsibility is another side, screen side. So in this situation, of course, he's going to adjust his footwork with full good footwork, with footwork position. He's going to push player on the screen because my opinion is that, of course, it's too easy to play 2-on-2 defense than 1-on-1. So his responsibility is to close his free side. If offensive player is going to beat him over there, he should make foul. Of course, we are discussing first, second of the quarter, last second of the game, all tactical stuff. But generally, his responsibility is to close one side. And this is opposite side of the screen side. Okay. After that, next very important teaching point for him, it's footwork. How to play against screen. Let's think that screen is made in the right way with contact, that screener put inside foot of ball handler between his legs. So in this situation, next step is how to avoid screen. So when I was player 2 million years ago, they teach us to go over with closest hand, with inside foot, sorry. But I'm teaching players to go out and in. So they're going to avoid screen, moving with outside foot. And after that, they are going to go next to the screen in order to be closer to the ball handler. So this is his responsibility. Of course, also in the moment when he is going to change position, he is not going to came back with his hand pressure. So he's still putting pressure on the ball with one hand, but he's just adjusting his footwork on the screen side. So at the same time, he is like this faking probably, taking with hand to touch the ball or being staying close to the dribbler. He's also buying time for screener defender to jump out to make hard hedge 90 degree with chest parallel on the with sideline in order to be ready to close ball handler. Of course, in this situation, very important is to teach hand work, screener's hand, screener defender hand work. He should be on the passing line, usually big guy with hands up, because we don't want some easy pass. So hand up, because with one hand, he's going to close first pass line. And with opposite hand, he's going to, let's say, deflect, but to deny a little bit low pass on the second pass.
Coach, just again to clarify, so you talked about the outside foot of the player defending the ball being the lead, in the sense that now that player, what your encouragement is, so they don't get screened, to get on the outside hip, essentially, of the ball handler for about a half second so they don't get screened. That's what you're talking about, right?
This is a key point, but this is the same principle which I'm using also for off-ball screens. So if screen is made correctly, you cannot go with inside foot. So you should escape and then cut inside to try to control player who is 1 second stopped with screener defender.
Love it. And then another common problem, which you can help clarify, is how long does the hedge stay? How long does that player stay?
First of all, before to start to discuss about it, we should talk about other players. Okay, so in this situation, third player, that's mean first player on the ball side. But let's say if you're talking about side pick and roll, shake pick and roll, let's say this situation, is not always the same ball side and perimeter and vision side is not same. Let's say like this. If screen is come, if they're going to play screen on the left side on the court, okay, ball handle is moving from left to right, from left hand to the right hand. So even if he is not on the ball side, even if he didn't cross split line, but if he dribble with right hand, player who is first on his right side is going to play deny. Because we don't want to left offensive player to make triangle with one pass, one easy pass, usually good players of the dribble pass outside of screen, and then diagonal pass to the big man who is rolling under the basket. So I don't want to allow this pass. Yeah. Okay. Second pass, so usually player in the corner on the same side, he's of course in the flat triangle position, but he's not going to bump and to roll on the roller. He's not going to help. He's just helping and recovering back. Player who is going to help on this roll is player on non-dribble side. And he's going to make hand check because usually shooter who is staying on opposite corner is going to lift on the screener rolls.
Okay. And does that tag defender who's helping on the roll, that change based on location of the screen, whether there's two on a side versus one on a side?
Yes. His job, this is now fourth player on the court, his job is not to wait for roller, for screener who is rolling to the basket. His job is to meet him. He should go approximately, I don't know, a couple of meters under the free throw line, or if you are talking about height, top of the key screen, he can meet him before the free throw line. We are going to make some adjustments according to the level of the screen. But generally, his principle is to, his rule is to go to meet roller. Okay. Because usually his shooter is running up. So because of that, when he is going to meet screener who is rolling to the basket, his closeout is much shorter than in situation that he's going to wait. Because usually the shooter from the corner is going to lift up on the roll. Doesn't matter if you're talking about short roll situation, which is today very, very useful situation. And a lot of top teams are using this because it's very difficult. Anyway, if he's going to meet screener, his closeout is much shorter than in situation if he's going to close to wait for roller under the basket. So this is next rule for him. Go to meet, bump, and go back to his shooter who usually lifts.
So as the ball comes towards you, you're one pass away. Your preference is that player's in denial.
Yes.
As the ball comes away from you,
you're in that triangle. He's going open in flat triangle, and he's going to adjust his position, moving to the ball. One of the basic defensive principles, jumping to the ball. Just if he's going to make correctly, if he's jumping to the ball correctly, he's already closer to the screener who is rolling to the basket, and then his running way is short. He's going to meet just a couple of steps, and after that, he's going to move up to control shooter. Of course, next very important rule, because now I'm going back, how long he's going to contain screener defender, we are going to decide according to the screener abilities, according to the level, how offense is going to play. But I'm starting first to teach that after the screen, screener defender is going to control one more dribble. So practically two dribbles totally from the moment when he changed direction, usually two dribbles. And after two dribbles, he's going back. How he's going back? He's going back lifting his arms up. Okay, so like this, he's going to close, let's say, vision line, vision contact with ball handler and screener who is rolling. At the same time when he's coming back with hands up, so defender from the help side is going to bump. So like this is not so easy for offense with ball pressure, because on the second dribble, of course, why I'm saying second dribble, because it's not real situation that ball handler defender is going immediately in good position after one dribble. But after second, it's his responsibility. And screener's defender responsibility is split between. So he cannot say so wide. He cannot be so wide that ball handler can come in. If he's coming in, this is his responsibility. This is rule, and we know who is going to correct or who is going on the bench.
Such a key point is to recover with your hands up and in the passing lane to the player you're recovering to, right? And is there a situation where instead of bumping, you would full rotate? based on, is it different between a pick and pop and a pick and roll, or yes. is generally the preference always the bump?
So it's completely different, because if a screener is going to roll to the basket, of course, that means that offensive team want to create some advantage under the basket. So this is a situation in pick and roll. Okay, pick and pop, again, depends who is player, who is popping out. So in pick and pop situation, we can use three different ways. Okay, ball handler defender can go between, can go first, and screener defender second. If ball handler is better shooter, if screener is popping out, he's going to push, and screener and defender is going under both players, trying to control shooter who is popping out after the screen, or screener who is popping out. At the same time, if you have another player in the corner, again, he's going to help and going back to his shooter who is staying in the corner. Because in this situation, if you have pop-out situation with hedge, it's very important to teach ball handler defender to lift hands up, because usually that should be lob pass from one to another side. So he should lift hands up after the screen in order to make this pass skip pass, which is a little bit slower than direct pass. Or direct pass after the pivot. This is good for us. We want this defensively.
I find that one of the best ways to teach, and with as you gain more experience like yourself as a coach, is that you start to identify before they're even going to happen what the common mistakes are that players make. So what are some of the common mistakes that you know you have to coach when you teach this?
No ball pressure, face cut of screener, miss of communication, and after that, help side defenders are not jumping to the ball at the same time. So player who is guarding shooter in the corner, usually from the night position, he is not jumping so well, and on the time, with bad good timing, he's not jumping well to the ball. When he's not jumping well to the ball, he's not in good position to bump a roller, and after that, he's late in closeout of the shooter. So this is trap for him. So practically, those three players are in problem, because players on dribble side, for them is easy, because they're going to make the night, they're not moving so much, especially if offensive players are not moving. If they are moving, they have just one-on-one responsibility, they don't need to help to anybody. So because of that, for them is easy. They have responsibilities for their players. Other free players who are involved in pick and roll defense, they should help recover on goal over the screen, outside foot, or make hard hedge and going back. So this is practically isolation with free players game. In this situation, with hard hedge, with shake pick and roll from one to another side, this is free players defense with fourth and fifth players who are just denying pass, but this is not so difficult for them.
Why are we seeing still more hedging in European high-level basketball, but we're seeing it less in the NBA? What do you think the difference is in terms of seeing it a little bit more?
By the way, I think that also in Europe we cannot see so much. So most of the top EuroLeague teams, they are using flat defense.
Yeah.
So flat coverage in the defense, because they want to push offense to make pull-up jumper from the middle distance. So statistically, it's much more dangerous to have three-point shot from the corner than pull-up jumper mid-range.
So you're seeing that the primary defense you're seeing mostly is now drop coverages.
Yes, drop coverage when screener defender is going just to fake, to control, and when screener defender is going to follow the level of the screener. So when he's rolling, he's going to follow him. So practically, coaches want to left ball handler to make some contested pull-up jumper from the middle range. And this is, if you are looking for fact, if you are looking for statistic, this is not so dangerous shot like spot-up shoot from three-point from the corner, which is next step if you are going to hedge, because they are going to pass the ball and next second pass is going to the corner, and usually this is spot-up shooter, so all teams are just looking for that.
On your closeout in recovery, are you teaching fly-by on good shooters, or are you talking regular closeout, keep the ball in front?
So next situation is in this situation, if offense is going to play pick and roll as we discussed right now, so shake pick and roll practically from single to double, from side with one player to side on two players. So in this situation, I'm not teaching flyby. I'm not a lover of flyby. I want to make closeout in this situation, now I'm going to involve some basic principle of closeout. Of course, depending on the situation, who is a shooter, we discuss about distance. So if shooter is Jan Veselý, we are going to let him to shoot. But if shooter is JC Carroll, he's much more dangerous than some big guy who is rolling to the basket. So what are my teaching points? So what is my first teaching point if we are talking about closeout on shooter after pick and roll? That was question. Okay, individual technique. I want to make closeout. Some coaches prefer to make closeout with two hands up. I don't like this because in 35 years of my basketball career, I've never seen player with two hands up moving well laterally. So it's not a natural move. So especially if player is going to extend two hands, two arms up, he's going to lift his legs. So he's going to extend knees. Extending knees, he cannot move laterally because after closeout, next move is lateral move. Definitely. So because of that, I'm teaching closeout with one hand, individual tactic, which hand? Hand closest to the shooter, shooting hand. So if shooter is right-hander, in this first moment, I want to not deny, but I want to control. Shoot, making closeout with the left hand. If shooter is left-hander, I'm teaching players to make closeout lifting right hand up. So even if this is probably a situation from street basketball, but I think it's very useful for player also. As a player, I remember that as well. It was very successful. If you are late, if player who is going to make closeout is late, because he's usually late, because closeout is situation on some screens or some rotation, I'm not going to teach at the beginning players to lift hand up. I'm teaching them to lift hand on the pad of the shooter. So he's practically lifting hands in this situation, okay? So in front of shooter, so when shooter want to prepare his shot, he's not going to use natural move. Probably with hands up, he must move ball left, right, which is something for the first moment. After that, next step, if you're going to recover well, you're going to lift closest hand. So this is tactic for the shooter, for good shooter who is going to lift up. But generally in closeout, when I'm teaching kids, I have three rules. For me in closeout, individual tactic of closeout means first to close, driving line to the basket. Second, to contest shot. So, but of course, if JC Carroll is shooter, first goal is always to contest shot in that way, which I already explained.
Changes by the player as you move up in levels of scout and different things like that, of course. So the other thing is, based on this recovery from ball screen, your hedge and recover situation, because you're passing, you're denying one pass away, are you less likely to X out in recovery if it's a two side? Are we more likely to recover to our check?
I didn't understand that, so I can repeat again.
So
you're talking about two players who are on the.
Yeah, so you've got one player helping in and one player denial, one pass away. If the pass goes to the farthest corner, are they switching checks?
No
switching of the checks. No, I assume not based on your denial.
Help and recover. And of course, player who denied from one side, now is going to deny from opposite side. So on every pass, of course, basic rule, jumping to the ball. All five players must jump to the ball. Because we don't need to switch, because this is situation I'm going to make X rotation only in situation that we have on the weak side two players. So if you have two players on the weak side, the lowest player who is closest to the baseline, he's going to bump. If pass is going on his man in the corner, I'm going to make X rotation. But this is situation when we are going to play pick and roll from double to single, from situation of what with two players on the side, not involved in screen, to one player. So this is different. But anyway, rule is always last player from the help side is going to bump. If you have just one player, he's going to bump and he's going to make close out on his man. If you have two players, last player is going to bump. If pass is going on his man in the corner, X rotation between two players. Usually those two players are 4-2 or 4-3.
So you talked about starting with hedge because it's aggressive. And then it's easier to teach passive after you've taught aggressive, which I totally agree with.
Yes.
Well, the other advantage to this is when you teach hedge and you teach these rotations that you're talking about, it's not that difficult to turn it into a full trap too, if you wanted to have a different coverage. It's the same, right?
It's absolutely same. Just a situation that after second dribble, screener defender is not going back. He's going to stay in the trap before ball leaves trap. When ball leaves trap, he's going to recover. So absolutely same, but in trap, you stay until ball is in. When ball moves out of trap, he's going to recover with some rotation to finding nearest player, free player. So this is very easy. After that, it's just question of timing. So very simple. So here we have rule, two dribbles on the second dribble or on the first dribble, if ball handler is catching the ball, he's going back immediately. He don't need to wait for second dribble. If he's stopping dribble and he's catching the ball, absolutely. This is also very important teaching point. So second dribble, if he's not going to stop dribble, because probably he can make, ball handler can make two, three dribbles. On the second, he's going back. If after first dribble, ball handler catching the ball, catch the ball, he can move back immediately, because after that, he's much more difficult roller, much more dangerous player roller than ball handler, because with ball in the hands, he cannot do anything because of recovering defender who is coming over there. So practically because of that, with kids, I'm trying to teach this also, because it's very important to teach offense how to play against aggressive defense. So teaching defense, I'm teaching offense, how to react against hard hedge and how to react against trap. After that, it's not a problem to teach them how to do something else. So this is for kids methodology, okay? And then next step is to teach flat coverage and next step ice defense.
Okay, so those are the next two in terms of that.
Yes.
And before we get there, are you supporting switching at all? Or is that something that only is situational?
Yes, I'm supporting if you have players and with that bodies, because also switching is counting on bad offense. So that's mean that you cannot find so many great players who are going to read well switching. You can see a lot of switching in NBA, in EuroLeague, but I'm not seeing so many players and so many teams to punish in the right way switching. So even in top team.
What do you think the best practice to punish a switch is now? What would you do?
So it's always good spacing and to make some isolation under the bus. Because, of course, if when defense switch, if offense is going to create strong mismatch under the basket, now defense is going to rotate with other guys, so they're switching with four instead with two. But anyway, strong pass, two passes, and try to find big men inside, roller inside. It's not always big, but roller inside. Because in this situation, I want to stop offensive set because I want to punish them immediately. So first look is always to punish under the basket mismatch, and second look is to punish mismatch on the perimeter. Yeah. Usually, most of the players are going to punish mismatch on the perimeter.
And after nowadays, that's a trend, right?
Yes. So because in the end of the story, what's happening in the end of the story? Defense is going to switch. Okay, switch defense. And then we have, I don't know, big guy on the small guy with ball handler. And he's going to make a couple of dribbles, step back and shooting. This is exactly what defense wants. So I don't want to do this offensively. So offensively, I want to put the ball under the basket or to create good spacing for guards to drive with some good movement without the ball or with pass back to him. So first of all, for me, for example, now we are discussing about offense also, but it's
all good.
It's connected, of course. What I'm teaching players as a player also, I remember that it was very difficult. So for big men who is staying on the ball handler, smaller than him, it's too easy to contest shot with just lifting arms and to move up and under, then moving laterally. So because of that, I'm teaching guards when defense switch on the pick and roll, to move laterally first, some kind of, let's say, hesitation side dribble, and then make change of direction and attack. I don't want them to attack at the same moment with movement directly to the basket. I want them to move laterally, couple of dribbles on the side, and then to read if they want to attack dribble side or if they want to change direction, because it's much more difficult for big players to move laterally and then play defense against penetration than just contest shot. This is good for them. Contest shot is okay. Step back from 10 meters. Ali Mohammed against any big guy in EuroLeague, this is something which defense likes.
Yeah, no, it's such a great point because, again, the advantage of the guard is space. So they have to create space first to be able to attack.
Yes. And also moving on the side, of course, moving with that lateral dribble on the side, Usually it's, of course, connected with probably clearing the court from the corner with shooter on the same side. So he will have in that situation much more because everything should be connected. When I'm seeing as a shooter in the corner that ball handler is going to dribble on my side, I'm not staying. I'm moving on opposite side to clear space for him to play one-on-one.
That's brilliant. So if we're talking about drop coverage or ice coverage, one of the key questions I get, and I'm sure you get asked all the time, is what's the cue to recover? Like, what's the cue for the big to recover to their check, and what's the cue to know that the guard recovered to their check in terms of those?
Let's start from opposite side. Typical mistakes of ball handler defender is when he's going to play ice defense, no ball pressure. So practically when defense is going to play ice, usually ball handler defender is staying a little bit away from offense, which is not good because I want him to put pressure on the ball. If he's going away, this is practically against zone defense because I want to put pressure. He should put the pressure on a ball and his responsibility is no middle. So, but with pressure, close the middle with 2 meters distance between him and ball handler. So this is his responsibility. Big player responsibility is to control level of the ball. So I don't want him to attack ball handler because we play ice defense, because we want some contested shot. We want shot of guard against big man. So in this situation, I want my big man just to move. So if ball handler is moving to the basket, he's moving back just on that distance that he can control because he has also ball pressure from the guard. So it's not easy to shoot. Very difficult. So it's problem in ice defense if screen is going to pop out. So as usually offense is going to attack. So in this situation, 2 ways. If screener is good shooter, I'm going to switch with next player and we are going to make full rotation with minimum 3 players, usually guards. Okay. If this guy is not so good shooter, player from the first pass is going to help and recover to his man, buying time to screener defender to come back on him. This is something which I'm going to teach kids, no, players to recover. But forget again, ball pressure. Ball pressure is key point because I don't want a nice defense to have. You can see so many teams are playing. For example, Golden State is very nice in this situation. They are playing very well. They are playing ice to switch situation a lot of time because they have quality of players to do like this, but they are putting pressure. So they're putting pressure on the ball handler. It's not like some, let's say, some hesitated trap. This is ball pressure influencing to push ball handler on the side. This is something because, of course, we have also sideline as a defender in this situation. In the case that we are talking about side pick and roll. But you can play also ice also on the top of the key. Why not? Because how many players you can find that they can shoot well from the dribble? Okay, against Russell Westbrook. Why not? Yeah. He's not so good from good shooter, not so good, if I can say. He's not excellent in this. He can damage less you shooting from 3-point pull up on the against ice defense than driving to the basket.
Are there scenarios where you're going under on anyone?
Yes, I'm going under if screen is going to happen out of the shooting range of the players. Of course, wide to fight, but in going under, we also, again, we are using same footwork. Foot away from defense and foot closer to the defense, so escape and go, or just like sliding door with back pivot under the screener. Also, this is good way because we have time if screen is happen outside or in some situation if you want to provoke some shoot from some not so good shooter. Also under, why not?
And then with that, you're seeing the twist, the rescreen, often on the under. So is there any special technique or cues that you're giving to players in terms of that? Would we go under, or usually you're going under, over in recovery?
If under. Again.
Until it gets in a shooting area.
Yes, yeah. But definitely so. If we're talking theoretically, this is a situation, so probably after screen, they are going closer to the basket. But in real game situation, they are not going so close to the basket. But even if they are going close, if you're going to play defense under, that's mean that conceptual risk is pull-up jumper. We want to close penetration with the defense under. This is primary goal. Of course, sometimes can happen that they can penetrate. But if they are shooting, okay, no problem. If they're scoring from the shot, this is coaching conceptual risk. Because, okay, we can discuss about all kind of the defense, but never game finish 0-0. So we cannot close everything. We cannot close and we cannot control everything. But conceptually, as a coach, if I want to play defense under, that's mean that I want to let them to shoot the ball off the dribble. I don't want to let them to penetrate to drive. For example, against Calates, I don't want to let them to drive. Okay, free screens under. Okay, in some situation with some short clock, we are going to decide to make on the second screen, but not so many teams are using red screen so much because they are not so good. Okay, usually they are passing ball out of the screen, which is wrong, because I think that defensively it's very difficult to play twice screen at the same time. So because of that, I don't know why offense is not using so much this. Even if defense is going to play hedge and under, offensive solution for me is again red screen.
Love it. Great stuff. Great depth of sharing. And coach, having so much experience and obviously being involved in so much coach education, I'm wondering, are there some trends that you're seeing, some new trends that you're seeing in terms of the evolving game? Is there anything that stood out to you that says, hey, this I've seen this here, but I'm going to see this more in the future?
So I don't like because basketball become so monotone in some situations. So some games, especially regular season in NBA, is not so interesting from coaching point of view because you're not going to see something new, some new trends or some new stuff. I think that going back in the past, going back 30, 35 years ago and knowing successful coaches from 30 years ago, for example, as a coach Pešić, who was my coach in under 16 ex-Yugoslavia national team with great generation, with Divac, Kukoč, Radja. I think that intensity is going to make difference. So I don't know how many coaches were watching that podcast are looking for European basketball. But for example, you can see clear difference between Barcelona before and Barcelona right now. What they are doing right now? Great bodies and great energy, great pressure, intensity, defensive intensity. This is something which with the game schedule, it's always some ace in the pocket for all the coaches. So if your team is going to play strong defense, good intensity, and maintain that kind of intensity in the frame of one game or in the frame of, I don't know, 3, 4, 6 weeks, depending on the game schedule, I think this is something which is always coming back. Tactically, new trends, I'm not going to see so many stuff. So you can find some situation, for example, on the ball screen that screener is going to, if he cannot set screen, he's going to lock his man and ball handler is going to use that stuff. You can see some new situations with some good players on position 4 to play pick and roll 4-5. So if they're going to switch, 4 has some advantage. But this is something which is not so new. So because of that, probably I should say something good about my colleagues from New Zealand, because always they are going to find some. I remember, for example, World Cup 2002 in United States, in Indiana, all European teams and most of teams from other countries out of the Europe, they start to play a lot of pick and roll, a lot of stuff. So New Zealand just play figure eight and after that pick and roll. You can see nowadays in today basketball, a lot of situation, 2 handoffs and then pick and roll, top of the key pick and roll, or down screen and then pick and roll. I should prepare, I think all the coaches, they should prepare team for some that kind of common situation with everybody are going to use. But from the other side, I think that all of us should find some other situation. One great example for it was EuroLeague game for a couple of weeks ago, Alba Berlin against Žalgiris. Simple box and one defense. Coach Aito played 30 minutes box and one defense and they create so many problems for Žalgiris. With great coach, with tactically one of the best team in Europe. Why? Because this is not common defense. So they're not ready. So also box and one and some kind of presses should be, because we cannot find something new. As we are saying in Serbia, we cannot find cold water. It's already funded. So not so many good new trends. New trend is now probably looking for last 2 years. Backline defense again, risking some shots. A lot of switches, a lot of pick and rolls, a lot of handoff pick and roll situation or down screen handoff pick and roll, which is very difficult for defense. But from the other side, if you're going to switch, you're going to find a lot of solution for that. So always we have some poison and we have some medicine for that.
Well, in thinking about innovation, the offense that you ran with New Zealand, I called it open,
yeah,
with the double flares and different, yes, things that happen. Yes. I mean, where did that come from? Many people won't remember it if they're younger, but for those of us that are a little bit older, we remember how tremendous that offense was. And where did that evolve from? Did that become a bunch of different concepts for you coming together, or did you adapt it from somewhere?
I'm going to adapt. Personally, I'm going to adapt my way of play according to the players which I have. For example, when I was coach in Iran, I had one guy, position four, who was great in shooting, but not so great in down screen shooting. So because of that, I create a lot of flare situation for him because he was very good in receiving the ball when he's looking for the ball all the time. So I think that, for example, flare screen is probably some new trend, which is very difficult to play against, especially if you have just two players. Mm-hmm. And especially flare screen after handoff situation. Usually you can see all top teams like Real Madrid. Also in NBA, you can see a lot of teams playing handoff and after handoff, flare screen for shooter. Barcelona, they are making diamond screen, handoff, flare, and down screen. So it's about intensity. If you're going to maintain that intensity, defensively is very difficult. But also, I think that is not easy for one shooter, okay, to shoot after three screens. So because of that, I think probably some trend which is coming from NBA, some short sets. So my colleague Igor Kokoshko from Phoenix Suns and now from Sacramento, he made a great job with Slovenia national team using just very simple set offenses, but short after one or two passes. Great shooters were alone to shoot the ball, Luka Doncic, Dragic, or Randolph. So because we can talk about defense, but you should think I'm generally offensive coach. So I was good coach, good boot player as a good boy, good point guard who scored a lot of points. Let's think a little bit offensively. So what one great shooter can do if he's going to run all the game, flare, down screen, back screen? He cannot shoot the ball. He can shoot, but he cannot score with high percentage. So because of that, I want to make easy life for him. High intensity, short offenses, one move and shoot the ball. This is something which is from offense important. Of course, we can say offense defensively is not so easy, so not so difficult. But if you're going to set one good flare screen for shooter, very difficult to play against.
Coach, one of your former players who I met in New Zealand told me about this system of numbering actions where you would call an action a one, a two, a three, or four, a five, or six, but then you could combine them together. So essentially, from say six or eight numbers, you could have 36 plays, yes, essentially from these actions. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So discussing about offense, first of all, I think that all coaches, my philosophy is to divide offense in three parts: fast break, secondary break, or early offense, and set offense. But that should be fluent. So when I'm running fast break, for me, first of all, to decide fast break in May is main of offense. But for me, fast break is not only three against two, four against two, four against three, five against two, five against three. For me, fast break is any situation of numerical on space advantage. So three against three, half court is also fast break. So I prefer to attack basket also in this situation. Then if you are not going to find some good solution in fast break, in some numerical or space advantage, when we start to play secondary offense or early offense, we should start from the same position from fast break. So I don't like that kind of offense that after fast break, players should change initial position for secondary offense. Secondary offense should flow after the fast break. So same position, I prefer to use four out, one win, one in situation. And from that situation, I'm going to create set offenses with different names or different calls for players. Of course, according to the defense, I'm teaching players how to read some specific situations and how to play. For example, if screener is four, if four is going to pop out, five is going to duck in. If screener is five, if five is going to roll, five is going to lift out to create high-low situation to spread defense outside. So those principles are after that part of the reading, of decision-making. And before to start to run offenses, I'm going to teach players like this. showing to them a lot of options. Generally, if we can discuss, because we covered before pick and roll defense or one defensive topic, and now we start to discuss about offensive topic, my rule, my motto is, in defense, we must have rules, strict rules, no excuses, no why, no if. I don't want to have this in defense. In offense, principles, and inside the principles, players must to read and to react and make decisions. So definitely offense must be more free than defense. So defense rules, offense principles.
Coach, got to ask, a country of just over 8 million, Serbia, what are they doing to produce such high-level basketball players? Because obviously, for generations, there's been tremendous basketball. One, I assume they just love basketball, but there's more to that. And that's what you get into in terms of athlete selection, identification, and development. So what are some quick hit ideas about what's happening there that maybe other countries aren't doing enough of?
Working mentality, fighting mentality, a lot of work. Because I was in Serbian Basketball Federation as a coach lastly in the last 10 years, but I was also a member of under 16 ex-Yugoslavia national team in 85, 86, 87. So from that team, six NBA players came out. Vlade Divac, Toni Kukoč, Žarko Paspal, a lot of players. So I should say, comparing that time with today time, that time talent identification and selection system was much better than today. Probably because of that, because we use science much more that time than now. Now we are not using, because now is problem, because also kids are not same like before. So we cannot find so many hard workers like before. But when we are talking about hard workers and about talented players, I must say, I should be honest, and I must say, I'm saying that in coaching clinics, that we have not also so many talented coaches. Because talented coaches can create talented players. So we cannot start from the roof. When we are going to build house, we start from the foundation. So foundation are coaches in youth program. Going in the past, before in ex-Yugoslavia, you can find so many great coaches in youth program. Now it's not situation, and now we have problem. Generally, now we have, for example, one team in B division, Serbia national team. So now it's not like before. But if you are going to ask, I think that's what we are working much, much more than other countries, even in youth. First, volume of the practice. Then there is something in the DNA of the players, in the DNA of the players. There is some fighting mentality, working mentality. Unfortunately, we are slowly going to lose that, I must say. But still, we are much better than other countries in that situation. I cannot say that we have some school, that we have some methodology, that you can find so many books about that ex-Yugoslavia or Serbian school, because looking just for other ex-Yugoslavian countries, they are following the same system. Working mentality, spending a lot of time on the court, a lot of time on the court, but I'm going back again. That starts from the coaches. If you have coaches who are ready to sacrifice for the players, who are ready to come in the morning early before the practice or before the school to work with players, they will invite players and players will come. So only extraordinary work.
So the breakdown in terms of the coaches at the youth level now, are there just not as many coaches coaching, or is it a breakdown in how we're developing coaches, or is it just it's different coaching kids now? You can't push them the same or challenge them the same? What's the changes in terms of your opinion?
Changes, because today youth program coaches, they want to be Željko Obradović and David Blatt. And they want to copy their set offenses. I just moved back right now from game Red Star Partizan, two top teams under 16. And from 24 players on the court, I saw just a couple of guys who can be top players. So you can see players, all of them, they know how to play pick and roll. They know how to read pick and roll, but they don't know how to use off the dribble pass. On the warm-up situation, I check most of the players when they move to make warm-up layup on the left side, they move on the right. So this is for me enough to see that they are not good with left hand. That was unacceptable in my time when I was a player. And for coaches who teach me, I'm talking about generation of the coaches. So I think that's like in all the stuff, because of internationalization of basketball and all the stuff, everybody want to play on the same way. So today, young coaches, they are looking for set offenses of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Los Angeles Lakers, Golden State, but they are not going to ask. And this is for me a problem because I'm teaching students and I'm teaching coaches. They know everything about pick and roll, pick and pop, blah, 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 most of them. But if you're going to ask them, okay, show me five drills how to teach kids layup, they don't know. So I think that problem is because now, start also in Serbia, because coaches are going to escape from fundamentals. Fundamentals, hard work, and strong physical preparation. Our advantage today must be science, because scientific research show what we should do in specific age, which kind of physical skills we can develop and we must develop following windows of trainability for specific age. This is good because in my time or 30 years ago, nobody knows anything about it. But now we should use science in that way, but still we should understand that kids are not adults, that we cannot use training methodology of top teams with kids. This is main problem. Generally, I'm not talking about only about Serbia. I'm talking generally because I'm running a lot of clinics and I'm discussing with coaches before, after, and during the clinic. And when they're going to see my drills, I say, okay, give me five variation of that drill. This is your coaching job. It's not coaching job to go on YouTube and to check five drills of Ettore Messina or Greg Popovich. Okay, try to find and try to understand purpose of that drill, what you should emphasize and on which skills you are going to work using that drill. I remember probably that can be interesting. I must mention one handball coach, my ex-professor from university. He was great coach in handball. He's, I think, only in the history of handball who won Olympic Games as a player and as a coach, Branislav Pokrajec. He passed away. He's not with us. But what he said to me, Nenad, you are ready for practice when you are ready to answer to any question which players can ask you for every single situation, every single drill. So it's not about just about copy drills. Think what you are working on and which kind of question players can ask you about that drill. So related to that, if you are going to find most of the answers, not all, you are ready for practice. You're not ready for practice if you're going to copy from internet practice of San Antonio or playbook of Michigan State or San Antonio or something like this. How to teach? So process, methodology, how to teach, teaching steps, what to do in specific age and how to solve problem. Okay, for example, my player is not good in passing. His pass is not so strong. How to improve? Drills, methodology. This is something which all the coaches should come back without playbooks, without computers, without softwares, just teaching, trying, and seeing if they have results and trying to find something else. Because coaching job is so creative job, especially in basketball, that you cannot unify stuff in that way. All of us are different. If somebody is going to give same practice plan to 10 coaches, all 10 practices are going to be different.
Yeah.
So, but fundamentals, proper physical preparation, and high intensity. This is something which never can miss from the practice. I'm not talking only about kids. I'm thinking in the same way also about top level.
I love it. Love it. It's so true. It's not, we spend way too much time about what to teach instead of how to teach.
Yes. And purpose, so purpose, teaching point. For example, I think also another common mistake in teaching, not only in youth, but also in top level, is speed, intensity. Okay, no, this is good, but this is not first step. This is third step. First step, good technique, proper execution, then repetition, then intensity, increase intensity. Most of the coaches today, they start from intensity. Even if they start top team 5-0, when they want to teach some set offense, okay, 5-0 immediately after 5 minutes. I show you this, run full speed. Okay, how to read, how to react, how to create spacing, how to create timing, when I should go up, when I should. Those stuff are teaching points, and without those stuff, you cannot pretend from players to run, to execute in the high speed something which they don't know correctly. This is my opinion, of course, personal, based on experience and on science too. How can I do full speed something? Because why we are doing repetitions? We are doing repetitions. We are practicing. We are spending all the day in the gym because we want to create good habit. If they are not doing correctly and if we are going to repeat, we are going to create bad habits. it's much difficult to break wrong habit than to teach something somebody who don't know anything, especially if you're talking about motor learning. So it's so complex, but it's so nice.
Love it. Love it. Coach, an honor to talk to you, an honor to spend some time and hear your thoughts and ideas on the game, and just so grateful that you took some time to share with us. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure too. So always I'm available for all the coaches who are interesting for you too, so they can contact me, of course, all the time. I can left also email if you need it, nenatrunic@gmail.com. It's always because I like basketball. This is my life, and I think that I can learn a lot in basketball, also talking with people from different continents and from different. So thank you very much, and it was my pleasure to discuss with you.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.